Mr. Oxford's car drives up Werter Road in the direction you are walking, towards the end where it meets his namesake, Oxford Road. Priam is impressed with the car's brand new limousine body, the ivory handles of its doors, its soft yellow leather upholstery, its cedar woodwork, its silver fittings, its lamps and its footstools. There is a table in the body for writing, two armchairs and a speaking tube. The perfection of the machine and of Mr. Oxford's attire and complexion causes Priam to feel rather shabby. And as the car glides through the encumbered roads of London towards the centre, Priam grows more and more uncomfortable. A mysterious force called habit seeks to pull him now back in the direction of the simplicity of Putney and the abandoned Alice. When you reach the end of Werter Road, turn right onto Oxford Road and walk up, crossing the next side turning called Disraeli Road. Instead of the comfortable streets of Putney, Priam finds they are now swimming past Hyde Park Corner to the accompaniment of Mr. Oxford's amiable and deferential conversation. And then the car stops in Bond Street, in front of a building with a wide archway. Now, crossing over Disraeli Road, immediately on your right, there runs a red brick building, a centre of art appreciation and study, with its high windows, glass studio on the top, Greek columns and a plinth above the covered entrance, bearing the sign Art School. As the two men alight from the car, Priam sees on a beaten copper plate under the archway of the building these words, Parfitt's Galleries. This is the celebrated galleries of his former dealers, who had dealt for him for many years, but who he had always dealt with himself by third party. He is afraid, mortally apprehensive, and a sickly sensation rises in his stomach.
Follow me, if you will.
Mr. Oxford's demeanour has greatly changed as he strides in, nodding Napoleonically to other glossy males that raise their hats to him as he passes. Reaching a private office, Mr. Oxford, with the assistance of a page, removes his gloves, furs and hat.
Fetch a frame for this picture. Mr. Leake, do take a seat, and would you care for a cigar?
Thank you.
And here's your cheque for £500. I dare say you've heard that I'm now the sole proprietor of this place.
Really?
So, come this way into my saloon and see what I promised.
And he leads Priam to where he is indeed not disappointed, for under strict lighting on a wall nearby hang several pictures that are not the pictures one sees every day. There is the finest Delacroix, a Vermeer, and then, as Mr. Oxford leads Priam onto the last frame, there is something that makes the bolts of Priam's very soul start. For it is a masterful, beautiful picture of an Italian hillside village with the clear signature of Priam Fahl in the bottom right corner.
Now that is, in my humble opinion, one of the finest Fahls in existence. What do you think, Mr. Leake?
Yes, I agree with you.
Fahl is about the only modern painter that can stand the company that that picture has in this room, eh?
Yes.
Priam knows that there is a considerable difference between Putney High Street and an Italian hillside village called Volterra. But the picture of Volterra and the picture of Putney High Street are obviously strikingly, incontestably by the same hand. One cannot but perceive the same brushwork, the same masses, the same manner of seeing and of grasping. In a word, the same dazzling and austere translation of nature.
Yes, that's the little collection I've just got together, and I am very proud to have shown it to you. Shall we sit down again, maître?
Well, I don't know.
Because I've bought a goodish few files in my time, and I must say I've sold them well. I've only got that one left that I showed you, and I've been wondering whether I should stick to it and wait for a possible further rise, or sell it at once.
How much can you sell it for?
Why, I fancy I could sell it for a couple of thousand. It's rather small, but it's one of the finest in existence.
Oh. Well, I should sell it.
But say that there was a very clever man that came along, and let us say he imitated Fowl so well that only people like yourself, Maitre, and perhaps someone like me, could tell the difference.
What do you mean?
Well, the style might be imitated and the market flooded with canvases practically as good as Fowl's. Nobody might find out for quite a long time. An imitation that no one can distinguish from the original is, naturally, as good as the original. There certainly would be a tremendous chance for a man who could seize it, if you understand me. But that is why I'm inclined to accept your advice and quickly sell my one remaining fowl.
A sudden, hidden anger fills Priam, who thinks,
"The dirty rascal wants me to manufacture imitations of myself for him. He's known everything all along and now wants to suggest terms."
"I don't know that I advise you to do anything with that painting. I'm not a dealer, Mr. Oxford."
"No, but you are its painter, aren't you?"
"What do you mean?"
"You are Prime Fowl, aren't you?"
"What makes you think that?"
"I think you are Prime Fowl because you painted that picture I bought from you. And I am sure that no one but Prime Fowl could have painted it."
"Then you've been playing a game with me all morning."
"Please don't put it like that, cher maître. I only wish to feel my ground. I know that Prime Fowl is supposed to have been buried in Westminster Abbey, but for me the existence of that picture of Putney High Street, obviously just painted, is an absolute proof that he is not buried in Westminster Abbey and that he still lives. It is an amazing thing that there should have been a mistake at the funeral, which involves all sorts of consequences, but that's none of my business. I am an expert, and I make my reputation when I see a certain picture with the paint still wet on it. I am a connoisseur, and if the facts of his death and burial don't agree with the results of my connoisseurship, I say they aren't facts. I say there's been a, well, misunderstanding about, well, corpses. Now, cher maître, what do you think of my position?"
"Well, I really don't know."
"You are Prime Fowl, aren't you?"
"Well, if you will have it. And there you are. Now you know. But I don't want it to get about. And I don't want to talk about it. It's a matter that only concerns me, and you must kindly remember that you bought that picture this morning simply as a picture, on its merits. You have no authority to attach my name to it, and I must ask you not to do so."
"Certainly. I bought it as a masterpiece. I'm quite content with my bargain, and I want no signature."
"I haven't signed my pictures for 20 years.
"Pardon me, but every square inch of every one is unmistakably signed. You couldn't put a brush on a canvas without signing it. For me, all your pictures are signed. But there are some people who want more proof than connoisseurship can give, and that is where the trouble is going to be."
"Trouble?"
"Yes. I must tell you now so that you can fully understand the situation. Some time ago, a man, a little dealer, came to me, offering me a picture that I instantly recognised as one of yours. I bought it, and then I sold that picture and guaranteed it to be a Prime Fowl."
"The devil, you did?"
"Well, as a connoisseur, I had sufficient confidence in my judgment."
"Who bought it?"
"Whitney C. Witt of New York. He's an old man now, of course. I expect you remember him, cher maître. Of course, he accepted my guarantee. Soon afterwards, I had the offer of other pictures, obviously by you, from the same dealer. And I bought them. I kept on buying them. I dare say I've bought 40 altogether."
"Did your little dealer guess whose work they were?"
"Not he. If he had done, do you suppose he'd have parted with them for £50 apiece?"
"Fifty
£10? I was only making £10 on each picture.
Please, bear with me, Maitre. I sold practically all those pictures to Whitney C. Witt, at first thinking I was selling pictures painted before your supposed death. I put Parfitt's name and reputation on their being yours. And then, one day, I heard from Mr. Witt that on the back of the canvas of one of the pictures, the name of the canvas makers and a date had been stamped with a rubber stamp, and that the date was after your supposed burial. Then, that Witt's London solicitors had made inquiries from the artist's material people here, and these people were prepared to prove that the canvas was made after Priam Fowle's funeral. You see the fix?
Yes.
My reputation and Parfitt's is at stake. If those pictures aren't by you, I'm a swindler. Parfitt's name is gone forever, and there'll be the devil of a scandal that ever was. But I found you now, I'm glad to say.
Look here. How much has Witt paid you altogether for my pictures?
Well, he's paid me £72,000 odd.
Priam then sees dealers as the ordinary painters see them, to be the authors of all evil. Now he understands by what methods Mr. Oxford has achieved his splendid car, clothes, office suite, and minions. These things are earned, not by Mr. Oxford, but for him, in dingy attics by shabby, industrious painters. But who asked Priam to die and accept tens instead of thousands? Priam alone.
Look here, Maitre. I shall be delighted to pay you £36,000 in an acknowledgement offer.
I won't accept a penny, and I can't help you in any way.
But Witt is threatening proceedings. I offered to take the whole lot back at the price he paid me, but he won't. He's an old man and he's angry. He thinks he's been swindled, and what he says is that he's going to see the thing through. I've got to show him what grounds I had for giving him my guarantee and prove to him that those pictures are yours.
I must go now. I'm late as it is.
But there will be an action in the courts.
I can have nothing to do with it. Good day.
What if you take the whole 72,000 and leave me with just a small commission?
And with that, Priam heads back to Putney to cash the £500 cheque and prepare Alice for what is to come. To find out, turn to the next scene.